Rising fuel costs this coming winter will be taken into account in next month's budget, according to the Minister for Public Expenditure, Michael McGrath. With electricity suppliers hiking charges on foot of rising global energy prices and carbon tax increases due in Budget 22, he says people are facing rising costs. All the major energy providers here have announced increases this year, some more than once, adding potentially hundreds of euro to annual household bills. Separately, IDA Ireland has warned that an energy supply crisis could do considerable reputational damage to the country's ability to attract investment. According to a report in the Business Post, the IDA has criticised an apparent absence of adequate forward planning and investment in both generation and transmission of electricity. Minister for the Environment, Climate and Communications Eamon Ryan is insisting, though, the state's energy infrastructure will be able to provide power to major projects. Eamon Ryan joins us in studio. A very good afternoon to you, Minister.
Good afternoon, Brian.
Thanks for joining us on the programme. Rising energy costs. What help is there going to be for those who will struggle to pay their electricity, their gas and other fuel bills this winter?
Well, as the Minister, Michael McGrath, said, we will have to intervene in the budget because there are very particular circumstances at this moment in time. It's an international phenomenon. It's outside our control. The price of gas is rocketing on the international markets. It's due to big international factors. The lift up in Asia, a lot of gas going for that market. Russia tightening the plug, tightening the supply. Cold winter last year. A whole series of international factors which are putting up the price of gas, which in turn puts up the price of electricity. It's likely to be a short-term phenomenon, not likely to be permanent, but in this interim period, we will be looking at the budget, as we did last year. Last year, we increased the qualified child allowance, the living at home allowance, and the fuel allowance to protect people against fuel poverty. And we're going to have to look at similar and potentially other larger measures, because for this winter, it is going to be a factor, not just here, but in every country across the Western world.
The factors you mentioned, as you say, are out of your control. What is in your control are the taxes that are levied on energy, including the further increases due in Budget 22 in carbon tax. To that extent, the government is contributing, is it not, potentially to fuel poverty?
Well, the carbon tax, first of all, doesn't apply to electricity, so the electricity bill going up is a separate unrelated issue. But what we've also committed to, unusually but correctly in my mind, that we are setting aside, hypothecating, keeping for ring fencing the revenues, part of the revenues that we raise in carbon tax, so that we do protect people against fuel poverty. As I said, we did that in last year's budget by increasing the social welfare provisions. We're going to have to do the same again this year and perhaps go further because of this particular short-term spike in international prices.
Sorry to cut across you, Minister, but those allowances are for the most part means-tested, and there are people who fall outside, if you like, the qualifying criteria for this, who will still struggle, will they not?
And that's why, we introduced a range of measures last year. The fuel allowance is probably the one that's most targeted to people at risk of fuel poverty. But why we went further in the likes of the living alone allowance and particular allowances for people with children. So we look at that again and we'll come forward with specific measures to address this very significant but hopefully short-term problem.
There is also this question of supply. We've had a number of amber alerts from some of the electricity suppliers already this year. Two power stations offline for maintenance. Are we facing blackouts and power shortages this winter?
We don't expect so. It's a separate issue. It's a very significant issue. We had two of our biggest, most modern power plants, gas-fired power plants, were out over the last year, major outages. It's expected to be coming back within the next 2 months, and that should see us through this winter. We have a bigger, more medium-term issue that we have a number of older power plants that we want to turn to cleaner fuel systems, the likes of Money Point, people would know, or Tarbert or other power stations. So we have to replace them with new, more balancing capability, new plant. That issue, I've been in negotiations, talks with the Commission for Regulation of Utilities and with Airgrid. We will manage it. We have particularly, I suppose, this winter, I think it looks like we should be fine. But in the subsequent winters, we will have to engage in auctions that bring on that alternative balancing power.
Does that mean that the extra generating capacity, which there was an attempt to provide for this winter, you're going to need it? We're going to need it for winter of 2022?
Yes, we are. There was a legal challenge against that, which has delayed us, but it won't stop us building it. But we need other additional plant. We can and will be good at this. The IGA, we've said to the IGA that we will make sure that you have the power supplies you need to insist the further industrial development of the country. If anything, while we're looking at the switching to renewable power, we have a comparative competitive advantage because it is now in this high gas, high fossil fuel expense world, it is much more competitive and we have a large supply of that.
Minister, what message does it send to the international investment community who we still try to attract here to invest in Ireland and to bring all the benefits that can bring? What message does it send to them that we've had amber alerts and a failed attempt to bring in extra generating capacity this year?
Just about every country in Europe has the same problem. We are at a significant change in the whole energy system as we switch away from fossil fuels. And yes, that does put the system under strain, but we're absolutely confident that we can do this in a way that we tap into our own renewable, more efficient, cleaner, more competitive power supply and at the same time balance the grid. As I said, in the next 2 or 3 years, that will be tight, but I'm absolutely convinced we have the ability to do that and provide the power that those plants, those new industrial plants may need.
On the broader question of security of supply, the objective is to achieve carbon neutrality by 2050, but there is this gap to bridge. How's it going to be bridged when, for example, you've said coal-fired Money Point will either be converted or will turn off? Is it 2025, I think, it's expected to cease operating. So how's that gap going to be filled?
It will be filled by us using other gas, more balancing gas systems, ones that you can turn on and off very, very quickly, that you'll only use when the wind isn't blowing, and that you pay them for that ability to turn themselves on at that time. We'll also look at, and ESB already looking at this, in the likes of Money Point, to switch to new fuels, the likes of hydrogen power, which you generate, it's gas, but you generate it by converting that wind power, converting it into gas, hydrogen, that you can use then in power stations. As I said, every country is meeting this challenge. They're all looking at going in the same direction, renewables backed up by the likes of hydrogen, and that gives me real confidence.
But you say gas. On the other hand, the government is opposed, or says it's opposed, to this proposed liquefied gas terminal on the Shannon.
Again, it's a slightly separate issue in terms of the issue at the moment. I mean, at the moment, LNG is not secure at all. One of the reasons for the spike in prices is that people can't control the LNG as to where it goes, and that's actually one of the underlying risks at the moment in the whole energy system. We can and will be using gas for the next 2 to 3 decades as backup power, as flexible power.
So why not a terminal then on the Shannon?
Because we have sufficient gas sources elsewhere, and we also have sufficient backup capacity, the likes of very large storage storage tanks where we can store distillate, which we can use in those gas-fired power stations, that in my mind give us all the security we need on the supply
side. It means
we're
dependent on Vladimir Putin and Russian gas supplies to a very great extent, doesn't it?
The whole Western world at the moment is to a certain extent realising that dependence on fossil fuels, depending on be it the Middle East or be it Russia or be it any other distant source for your power system, is not a clever place to be. But the best answer to that is to develop our own power supplies and actually then turn ourselves into an exporter so we actually share the excess we have with other countries.
Right. And just to be clear on the Shannon proposal, because the promoters have reapplied for planning permission and the programme for government says, and I quote, "We do not believe that it makes sense to develop LNG gas import terminals importing fracked gas. Mm. Now, if the promoters are able to say to you, well, we can give you a guarantee it won't be fracked gas, it will be other natural gas sourced from other sources, would that mean that you'd be open to the proposal?
No, I don't believe, firstly, it's easy or possible to do that. But secondly, there's a wider issue here, Brian. We are facing, in the climate change, an immediate emergency. And the first issue in that is to actually stop our use of fossil fuels, to divest from the use of fossil fuels. So rather than adding to the addiction, as it were, and getting one last further major supply point, what we want to be is a country that leads the development to a new economy, a clean economy.
But you said we will continue to use gas for decades to come.
Yes, but it'll be used less, and it'll be used as backup flexible power, and we'll pay companies to be able to have that capability, and in time switch from that natural gas to hydrogen gas, which allows you the same backup capability without having all the emissions that come with it. We cannot ignore climate change. We cannot keep investing in yet more fossil fuel infrastructure, that risks being stranded assets that we could end up investing massively in a facility that we would not need. Better to invest in likes of new hydrogen facilities in such places where there is a real future, where there is security.
And just a final question, and it's in relation to a story we'll be covering in just a few minutes, the contamination, water contamination in Dublin and in Wexford. Part of the same problem identified by the IDA, a lack of adequate forward planning and investment?
I think what the EPA said over the weekend was very strong language. I think they described it as abject failure in management oversight in the control of operations and the sharing of information. That's some of the harshest words I've heard kind of one agency speak to another state agency, but I think they're appropriate in this case.
What action can and should the government take?
I think the key action, firstly, was the EPA and the HSE actually doing the full immediate audit to look at what is the situation in both plants, but also in the other 18 of our largest plants. It's that immediate audit to look to see that these practices, these operational mistakes are not going to be seen elsewhere. And I think that was the most immediate first action.
Minister and leader of the Green Party, Eamon Ryan, thanks for talking to us here on the News at One.